Feelway Mulatto on Cape Talk.
You're sort of, yay, that's me they're talking
that's my
about.
My name, yeah.
You know, but that gesture's diminishing in enthusiasm, so obviously you're getting used to it.
A little bit.
A little bit. Have you been yet? I was invited to a preview last night and I couldn't go. I was so crossed.
We
are talking about the Zeitz Museum of Contemporary African Art.
Correct.
Which I cannot wait to visit. I talked to the architect on his first visit to Cape Town four years ago, and he shared his vision. And since then, that vision has remained so firmly in my mind's eye. Yeah. I can't wait to go and see it.
And crystallized. Me neither. I haven't gone. I was early invited to some of the benefit sort of events.
Of course you were.
But I must have fallen off the affordability list because I haven't heard from them since. No. I'm going to check it out with the rest of the family of Cape Town on the weekend. I'm very much looking forward to it. And it's free this weekend, so I'm very excited.
Ah. Oh, no. Lots of people rubbing their hands. And it seems then opportune to talk about art as business in Africa.
Absolutely. And today I really want to talk about it more in terms of the accessibility of it for us as listeners. I know we tried to do that on the show, but, you know, I think it's quite exciting. And you're right, that vision that the Zeitz Museum has had kind of represents this wonderful building of interest, prolific production from the people in Africa, and increasingly recognizable names in art and a much greater interest in art. You know, we've had the longevity of people like William Kentridge for the longest time, and you're getting more and more recognizable names like your Lionel Smith out of South Africa, your Wangechi Mutu out of Kenya, who, when I met her in 2008, was already a big deal in New York and was still exhibiting as one of the main installations at the Joburg Art Fair just last year. So, you know, you still have those very big names. The question, of course, is, you know, how do you take a look at art from the perspective of an investment? And I think that and I think I'm not alone on this view, that it represents a really great asset class and is increasingly growing as one. One that you could possibly put amongst your investments next to property, equities, bonds. It's an incredible diversifier.
Yeah, if you look at what's happened to the cost of John Mayer or Gerard Sokoto or Maggie Lopeshow or whoever, you know.
It's a really great store of value, particularly in a world that after the great financial crisis, you know, this is when art started being seen sort of by the top big family office and high net worth investors as an interesting place to invest. You know, in an inflationary world post the great financial crisis, after the, you know, wide monetary policy we saw, it became, as you said, you know, a great store of value, similar to gold, but even with greater advantages. You know, you can't hedge against a piece of art. It's obviously kind of difficult for you to value it because it's so subjective, but it represents a really great uncorrelated investment. You know, I think it outperformed the S&P 500 by 50%, the art and all art index, over the 10 years to 2010, and it continues to grow. It grew over 200% in 2016. So,
but the challenge there, as the challenge with any investing, is to choose the right vehicle, because that increase is all around stuff which has been increasing in price. From artists whose worth is established, whose desirability is established and has been for decades. What you want to do as an investor is invest in a company before everybody else realizes how good it's going to be. And the same with art.
Absolutely.
You want to be able to go to the UCT Michaelis exhibition at the end of the year and be able to pick out the early work of somebody who in 20 years' time is going to be selling for millions.
I think you're absolutely right. I think there are two sides to that. So from the perspective that you're speaking about, as I say, art is a very subjective asset class. You know, you can't price it the way you can gold. But at the end of the day, like any other asset, it's about who's willing to pay what for it, right? And what I think has been quite interesting in the development of the industry is the global interest that we're getting in African art has been very positive in terms of the fact that it creates a marketplace. And so these
really, because I was going to ask you whether Africa is viewed as a place of craft or art, or is art beginning to match and overtake craft as the default position that somebody takes when they think of
So it's not
African
about the
creativity.
It's not about the beads on the corner anymore. No. So for example, earlier this year, the Art Paris Art Fair had Africa as the guest of honor. Over 20 galleries coming from Zimbabwe, South Africa, Benin, Morocco contributed to a 3-day art fair of just, you know, showcasing African artists and particularly African galleries. I think that the Zeitz Mocha in itself, being, you know, German led, but, you know, the launch that we saw last weekend was a very global one. Insofar as, you know, it's called the answer to the Tate Modern. And I also think that there are some local developments, such as the Cape Town Art Fair, like the Joburg Art Fair, which is increasingly global as well, that are being picked up by art developers, art brokers and art dealers around the world. From our side as the investor, of course, you were saying, how do you pick out the Michaelis artist? You know, as I say, it's very difficult for you to have a particular rule, but the art experts at Forbes kind of give three points that you really need to look out for. And the first is quality. You know, try to buy the highest quality that you can afford at that time, which is often the rule you're also given for property. So you can see how it's got asset class similarities in that regard.
And rather buy one Naspers share than 1,000 shares of that company coming to market for the first time with no track record.
It's so funny you say that. The governor of the Reserve Bank once laughed at me and he said to me, you come in here and you're carrying an iPhone. What you should have done was buy an Apple share. Similar concept. But the rarity is the second sort of golden rule about how you're buying something. Are you buying a print or is it an actual painting? You know, I think there are a number of Lionel Smiths around the world, but, you know, I think each sort of composition is quite different. And then obviously the price. Are you trying to set a record? You know, the Picasso sold for a record $179 million in 2015. I don't know about that buyer. I'm not sure that was the smartest thing. Or are you coming in at a fair price where you can get a great return on investment? And I think that the attempt to get people into the industry and finding these sort of gems is what the Cape Town Art Fair was trying to do when it launched 5 years ago. You know, it's quite low entry fee, $140, I think, or $50 bucks for kids. And the idea being that, yes, they're the big showcasey Zeitsmoker types of pieces that you can find. But fundamentally, there's a 2,000 rand piece. There's a 1,500 rand piece that might turn out to be, you know, something big. There was a time when Picasso's painting was worth the paint that he bought to make it.
There was a time when William Kentridge was selling for 800 rand.
Oh my goodness.
Artwork. But I was earning 25 rand a week at the time.
Well, this is the struggle.
It was as unaffordable for me then as it is now. I have very bad news for you, Miss Moloto. I have a text which reads, Web Tickets has just told me that the Zeitsmoker online free tickets are sold out.
Aww.
You're going to have to pay.
With what? Will you lend me something? Give me a painting. I'm teasing.
I have plenty that are worthless.
Thank you very much for that update. That's unfortunate. But what I love about that is that the demand is clearly picking up. And I think that's one of the intentions that the Zeitsmoker was trying to really push through as well, is how do we get more people seeing more art and appreciating it more?
I don't know how alive this contention is, but there was a lot of debate within the fine arts community about the decision taken around who gets to curate.
Yes.
Because then that person gets to decide what is valuable as African art and what is not, and they are very different views about who and what and what style is that which must be displayed, and the more it is displayed, the more likely it is to be bought. So these are really fine.
That is true. I mean, I think when the V&A decided on the project before they found the Zeitz Foundation, you know, they hadn't really thought about contemporary art as necessarily the way to go. And the Zeitz, I think it's Mark Kutsier as his curator, were the ones who said, you know, contemporary is the way we want to go. When you walk into the museum, I understand it's very much a post 2010 kind of look. At the end of the day, that seems to be when the energy about the pieces came alive, right? I don't think there are many Baroque pieces that people were speaking about at this particular time, and I'm no expert. But what I think is quite interesting, you know, Renata Tate, so maybe in a couple of decades' time, we could talk about the artists that have passed. There's something about the story of the living artist as well that happens to be current, that carries with the art in the African story, you know? I think the art carries with the artist's story, and therefore it makes sense that it'd be a current, an existing artist or one that is alive and therefore young.
Rafael Mamaloto of Ambassador Advisory, thank you very, very much indeed. We will chat about another business aspect of Africa next week. And